Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An Erios original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the poisonous murders of Mary Ann Cotton. Here's what you need to know. When Mary Ann Robson was born in the small English village of Low Moorsley on October 31st, 1832, no one could have predicted she would grow up to become England's first serial killer. Today she is known as Mary Ann Cotton, though throughout her life, she assumed a new surname with each of her four marriages. At the age of nearly 20, she married her first husband, William Mowbray, a colliery worker. Legend has it that Mary Ann gave birth to 8 or 9 children while married to Mowbray, though only 4 of them were ever registered. 2 of those 4, Margaret Jane and John Robert William, died in very early childhood. Then her husband William became ill and died in 1865 at the age of 39, followed by the death of one of their 2 remaining daughters. William and his children were notably insured, and it was Cotton who collected upon their deaths. Mary Ann sent her last living child, Isabella, to live with her mother and went to work as a nurse. There, she met George Ward, who became her second husband. Within a year of their marriage, Ward was dead. Her third husband was James Robinson, a widower with 5 kids of his own. In 1867, prior to their marriage, 2 of Robinson's children became ill and died. Mary Ann's own mother had recently died while in her care, as did her daughter Isabella. Still, Robinson buried his own suspicions and married Mary Ann, who was now pregnant with his child. Their baby girl died only a few months after her birth. Later that year, Mary Ann gave birth to another son, George. When Robinson discovered, however, that she had raided his savings account and forced his children to pawn valuables, he threw her out and kept custody of George. She went on to marry her fourth and final husband, another recent widower, Frederick Cotton in 1870, pregnant once again with what Frederick presumed was his child. Rumors swirled around town that Marianne was having an affair with another widower, Joseph Natress, someone she had taken up with years prior. Regardless, Frederick's fate was sealed. He died in September of 1871, as did his older son and his baby son with Marianne. Shocker, Marianne became pregnant yet again by her now live-in lover, Joseph Natress. And you guessed it, Joseph was dead within a year, along with Marianne's last living stepson, Charles Edward Cotton. While most people accepted natural causes as a reason for these deaths, one villager by the name of Thomas Riley was certain that Charles Edward's cause of death was not natural at all. Riley pushed for answers, and eventually an autopsy revealed the shocking truth that there was evidence of arsenic in Charles Edward's body. Marianne was arrested, and the bodies of Joseph Natress, Frederick Cotton Jr., and Robert Cotton were exhumed for evaluation. All four were confirmed to contain traces of arsenic as well. Marianne Cotton was tried and convicted of murdering her stepson, Charles Edward. Her sentence was death by hanging, though she maintained her innocence until the bitter end. On March 24, 1873, for 3 full minutes, Marianne Cotton, who allegedly took several lives, struggled in vain to save her own. Fun facts, aka death stats. Though there are discrepancies over the total number of alleged victims, it is estimated that Marianne Cotton killed between 14 and 21 people. Cotton was convicted of murdering her fourth husband's son, Charles Edward Cotton, and sentenced to death on March 24, 1873. She was 40 years old. Marianne Cotton became known as Britain's first serial killer, with an estimated 21 victims, including 11 of her 13 children, 3 of 4 husbands, 1 lover, and her own mother. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest is friend and actor Aubrey Dollar. Hi, Aubrey.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, we are so excited to have you on for such a terrible tragedy.
Yes, I was kind of curious why I was the guest for this particular episode, but flattered all the same.
Right.
You know why I think you popped into mind? I think you would play a really great Mary Ann Cotton.
Mm. Nice. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Why? So she has an insidious quality?
No.
Opposite.
Because I think she's very unsuspecting.
Exactly.
But I think she's got the acting chops to pull it off.
Wow.
Oh, that's kind. I thought maybe it was because I am a mother and it would take a mother to understand killing a child.
Well, we're going to tap into that too.
Yeah. Please feel
Let's
free.
Let's unpack that on that podcast today.
Aubrey, we like to start off the show by asking our guest, what is something that is recently alarming you? What is something that is keeping you up at night these days?
God, I mean, other than climate change and the world and what is alarming me? Mm-hmm. I suppose my child he's 4 and he started asking a lot of questions about the inside of a body and like wanting to see what the inside of a body looks like. Like Lucas, my husband, maybe was supposed to have his appendix out. He did not. But Arlo's comment about that was he wished he could be there to see what the inside of his body looked like.
Oh my
goodness. So it was just more sort of curiosity, you know, but it's been a little alarming to me. I've thought about it.
You know? What do? You show him pictures or do you even go there?
Yeah, I got him for Christmas. I got him like a clear human
liver?
With all of the organs you can put in and take out.
That's cool.
We'd have fun looking at that.
Don't let him listen to this before Christmas, because then you'll ruin the surprise.
That's true. Yeah. He's a regular listener, too.
Yes, this is an all ages podcast.
Correct.
Yeah. Starting from the womb, actually, we encourage it. I was going to say you should also buy him the game Operation. That was
gonna
be my
pitch. You know,
I
thought about that. Yeah, I think I think I will. And they make all kinds of different operations now. There's like Paw Patrol Operation. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Maybe you have a little doctor on your hands.
Hopefully. Just not an actor and we'll be good.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed, because he's going to have to make a lot of money for all of us, all of your friends, really.
Yeah, exactly.
And there really is no more powerful instrument in the world in the actor's heart, which I believe is if you were to see it, it would like blind you, sort of like looking at the sun.
Mm-hmm. That's why he wants to see Aubrey's.
That's Lucas's. Right. Maybe it's what's inside. He wants to see it because, you know, it's right.
Our listeners, Lucas Kavner is Aubrey's husband, and he was on our Cecil the Lion episode. Yeah. Very popular, very, very, popular tragedy.
Go listen to that and see if you think that they're compatible.
Write in. Let us know.
Write in your answers.
Please do.
So, you know, I'll tell you who wasn't compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne Cotton and all of her husbands.
Excellent transition.
Thank you so much.
I was, good. You
nailed it. It just came to me. So many, you know, the only one who really got away with living was her third husband. And he didn't, he didn't go on unscathed, because he did lose children to Marianne Cotton. They believe, actually, it was Charles was his, no, am I getting this wrong? No, Charles was Mr. Cotton's son. Okay, so he was the fourth husband's son. But the third husband found out she was stealing from him and kicked her out before she could get to, I guess, murdering him. I mean, it would have eventually happened. Now, there's a lot of names, a lot of things to keep track of during this episode. And the timeline kind of goes back and forth, because sometimes the children who die come after the husband.
The relationship, the term of the relationship.
After the term of the relationship, yeah.
So she goes back and kills those.
Well they're with
she's
her.
Still looking after them, I
yeah.
see.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
It probably has to do with like proximity, right? Like the people who are around her all the time are going to die sooner than the ones that she has less time with to poison.
That would, I guess. You seem like you... You know how to poison people, Clayton. I'm more suspicious of you now than I am.
How are you guys feeling down in Puerto Rico? You're feeling better?
Yeah, we did need some time.
Yeah, weird. The diarrhea stopped and...
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Boy. Let's start off by doing something unprecedented here at The Alarmist. Let's put... Marianne Cotton, the actual murderer, up on the board first.
Okay. Aubrey, we sometimes forget to do that here.
Great. She did maintain her innocence, though, so, you know, it's questionable.
Correct.
This is why Aubrey would make a great Marianne Cotton, because she's already defending her.
Exactly. She's embodying the
She
the
really
character.
Likes this character.
Yeah.
She's getting behind her.
Yeah.
This is regarding her second husband, George Ward. And this is from Dark Angel. Dr. Malling reported that Ward was beginning to display signs of paralyzation in his hands and feet. Arsenic, given in small doses, can produce a condition characterized by a loss of strength, confusion, and paralysis. His death certificate stated his occupation as an engine driver in a steam tug, a very low status job. All in all, he was not what Marianne had aspired to in a husband. The circumstances were ripe for disposing of such a liability if that was how Marianne wanted to resolve the situation, and she had good access to poisoning at the infirmary. This is where she worked.
Right.
Now, this is regarding the deaths of the children, James, Elizabeth, and Isabella. This is from the first husband. James Robinson, Mary Ann's, oh, sorry, third. James Robinson, Mary Ann's third husband at the time of her trial, said, "I'm convinced that my children were poisoned. I suspected it at the time, but I did not want my mind to dwell on the subject. They were healthy and strong and only ill a few days before they died. Anytime she gave them anything, they vomited and were sick and purged." Dr. Shaw, describing the children's condition, said, "They rolled about on the bed. They foamed at the mouth. When given a drink of water, a hand basin had to be ready, so they retched it up." Retched it up. Just, I can't imagine poisoning a child.
Oh, God.
Right. Yeah, the four husbands, it almost feels understandable in a way. Right.
Marriage poisoning is more acceptable than child poisoning.
Yeah. Sure.
Times a thousand, I think.
And these are little children. They're, you know, 3 years old. Some of them are barely a year old. To sit there and watch them be sick, because it's not just like, oops, you know, you gave them arsenic and they suddenly died, right? It's it would take days. And you're just watching them and knowing that you did that to them. It takes a very, like, a callous human being.
Oh, totally. I mean, totally heartless. Yeah.
And that she continued to get pregnant after that. Also.
Yes.
It's like, is it, what really, what I wonder is like, is because, you know, initially she had the first husband and the kids and she collected the insurance money. Was it just all just like a money thing? Or really, like, is it a combination of a true psychopath, like a serial killer who just wanted money to survive? Like, why was she doing this to children?
Right. You get more insurance money the more children who die.
You did. But here's the thing. It wasn't that much insurance money. Right. The children were under the insurance. And I think that her having a child played into how she got people to get these men to marry her. So I think most of the time she was pregnant before they got married.
It was like a way of controlling, having control over the situation or something, or
right. Or just like really just being like, okay, I'm pregnant, so we have to get married.
Well, right. But didn't she have like 8 children with her first husband? I mean,
that is the weird thing, Aubrey, because they were married for like 12 years.
Yeah.
There must have been some kind of breaking point.
I was going to say maybe the 8 children.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom's mother had 8 kids and she was mad a lot. I didn't know her very well, but my mom said she was an angry lady.
Yeah, you can't be mentally okay and take care. I mean, I know this was like the day when kids were your farm workers and it wasn't modern, but still.
You didn't actually watch them. You put them to work.
Right. Yeah.
Very different. Very different. Now that I'm thinking of it, my grandma was one of 11 and my grandpa was one of 12.
That is crazy.
That's why we have so much family in Puerto Rico. That's why when in the town that we're from, you have to ask people's last name because you don't want to fall in love with a cousin or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Just even being pregnant that many times, it blows. I mean, it's a task. Yes. It tears up your body. Mm. You know, I did it once and that's the only time that I will do that. like be pregnant again and again for decades of your life. I don't.
Chris, could you find out how many kids she had total? Because I mean, she was pregnant for many years. And while you're doing that, going back to something we were talking about, the money, this is regarding the death of Joseph Natras. And like, was it financially, like, did she do it on purpose for the money? Regarding the death of Joseph Natras, which was her lover, Mary Ann benefited financially from the death of Joseph Natras. She received money from a Shildon-friendly burial society, about £15, as well as clothing and a decent watch to the value of £30. So let me continue just, and we'll come back to the whole money insurance thing. This is regarding the death of stepchild Charles Edward Cotton. Dark Angel says, the deaths of Joseph Natras and Robert Cotton leave Mary Ann with one stepchild, Charles Edward, who she wanted to commit to the workhouse. Within days of her request being refused, the boy was taken ill and died. Now, I was like, what is a workhouse? Workhouses were where poor people who had no job or home lived. They earned their keep by doing jobs in the workhouse. Also in the workhouse were orphaned children without parents and abandoned children, the physically and mentally sick, the disabled, elderly, and unmarried mothers. So she, when she went, she called upon this, I think it was a government worker, and said, I want you to take this child to the workhouse. And he was like, okay, but like, you go with him as well. And she's like, oh no, I wouldn't, I'm not going to go to the workhouse. Right. Just take him. Cause it was it was not a desirable place to go. And apparently the man was like, well, this kid has a perfectly fine home. He can stay with you. Why would you send him to the workhouse? Right. And she's like, okay, fine. And then she killed him.
Hmm. He should have gone to the workhouse. If he knew any better, he would have gone there. God. Yeah.
Maybe it was an act of mercy on her part. Like, she kind of liked that one.
Right.
Oh, sure. He did last the longest.
She had 13 kids is 13. The number total.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot of kids.
She died when she was 40, I believe. So, I mean,
so
do
like
the
math. Your 20s, yeah, your last 20 years of your life are just childbearing.
Yeah. It takes 10 months. That's
some time in between. But like, basically, like, you're probably more pregnant than not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're nursing the whole time, right. I think.
That's... I mean, now,
No, I was just going to kind of lean towards something of just the fact that it happened over and over. You wonder if there is some kind of, does she derive pleasure out of this? Did she, you know, get in the habit of it, get in the swing of it, and sort of start to in a psychopathic way derive some sort of pleasure out of this process?
I think it, so.
Well, I was just sort of leading you to the next kind of
Well, before we even go there, I just want to say the counter argument, which I'm sure Aubrey will agree with because she's working on this role already.
Huge Marianne Cotton fan.
This one is Martin Connolly says, it is to be remembered that Marianne was only convicted of one murder. Although Marianne was remained for the murders of Natris, Frederick Jr., and Robert Robson, these cases were not heard in court and therefore evidence was never tested. As for all the others, there's absolutely no shred of evidence produced to substantiate a case against her. In that period, many things were black or white in legal terms. Information was not as easily accessible as it is in our internet age. Then people did not have the knowledge and resources that we have in our police and legal system today. To judge her then is difficult. History has blackened her name and she never gets a sympathetic hearing.
Weren't several bodies exhumed and also arsenic was found in them?
Yes.
After her fourth husband died, there's a villager, Thomas Riley, I think, who was like,
well, it was Charles, the child, the kid she was trying to send to the workforce, who was her stepson. It wasn't even she had not birthed this son. After he died. Okay. I'll read this to you because I think it's really interesting. So this is according to murderpedia.org.
We have a website that is called that.
Only the finest high quality researchers and research organizations do we interact with here. We pay top dollar.
It's a dot org.
I'm curious what kind of ads you get after visiting that website.
You don't get any. I'm sorry.
Cleavers? No, arsenic? Shotgun?
Yeah. Well, I'm on a list now. Like, I'm definitely on some kind of FBI list.
They're watching you for sure.
Yeah. This is according to that website, Murderpedia. In late spring of 1872, Marianne sent Charles. So this is how it all went down. Marianne sends Charles to a local chemist to purchase a small quantity of arsenic. The chemist refused to sell the poison to anyone under the age of 21, as was the law. Undeterred, Marianne asked a neighbor to purchase the substance. And in July, Charles died of gastric fever. But Marianne had either been in West Auckland area for too long, or the neighbors were readily skeptical because suspicions were immediately aroused in neighbors and physicians. The first person that Marianne told about Charles's death was Thomas Riley, a minor government work official that she had consulted previously about the possibility of sending Charles into a workhouse. This is the guy who rings right. the alarm. Riley said that it would only be possible if she went with him, which she declined. And she told Riley that the boy was, quote, in the way of a marriage with Quick Manning. So and predicted that, quote, I won't be troubled long. He'll go like all the rest of the Cotton family.
I mean, she's really not doing a good job of covering her tracks. Like, she's having somebody else buy the poison. She's, you know, talking to the guy that, oh, that kid that I tried to have you removed from. Yeah, he's dead now. Like,
yeah, she's very confident.
It's like she wanted to be caught.
Do we know, was this all in the same town or was she sort of moving towns between marriages?
She was moving around a little bit. Chris, perhaps you can confirm. But yes, there was some movement. But at this point, she was kind of getting a bad reputation in this small town. And this guy, Riley, said that the boy apparently looked completely healthy. And so he was surprised when this is the wild part to me. He's surprised when Marianne stops him only 5 days later to say that young Charles had died. First of all, 5 days later, he's dead, right? She asks about sending him away. She can't do it. So she kills him. That is a red flag. Mm-hmm. And number two, the fact that she would like stop the guy and be like, hey, man, by the way, Charles is dead. Just so you know.
Well, this is like, you know, they say serial killers are very careful at first and then they kind of start craving the attention and they want that kind of to be trailed and almost like this desire to be close to being caught. Like, I wonder if there's some psychology there where, like, she's killed so many people at this time that she's kind of taking big risks because she kind of wants to be exposed.
Right.
Yeah. Is that part of it?
Well, let's put up on the board getting away with it once. This is what I kind of came up with, but we can also workshop this because it plays into this. And this is according to Deborah Blum, who says in Wire, and Deborah's going to be our guest expert. So we're excited to speak with her in the aftermath.
She specializes in the
poisoners. So she said, arsenic forensic chemist Rudolf Witthaus noted in 19th century crime statistics has been in almost every instance the agent used. Oh, am I missing a word here? Arsenic. Yes, arsenic has been in almost every instant the agent used by those who, having succeeded in a first attempt at secret poisoning, have seemed to develop a lust for murder and have continued to add to their victims until their very number has aroused suspicion and led to detection. And that pattern would continue until the Marsh test was so refined that the ability to detect a bare whisper of arsenic in a corpse so well that the poison lost its homicidal charm. So I think what she's talking about is like, it's like they got it was such a good poison.
Right. The means with which, the way in which she was murdering these people it's almost like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a comparison, but it's almost like when you get a really good tennis racket, it's like you just want to use it more often.
Yeah, just like that.
Go out there and smash them balls.
Murdering them, providing for them too, because it was probably in things that she cooked.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's good. That's a better point.
That's malicious, right? Like that's.
I mean, it feels like there obviously aren't as many female serial killers as male serial killers, and you would think women kill with intention, sort of more than the random high, and that it was all her family members. I don't know. I was sort of wondering just now if she. Obviously, she had mental issues herself, but maybe in murdering her children, she wanted to save them from her genetic destiny.
Wow.
Really taking the side of this character.
I know. I was going to say, that's very compassionate of you.
Super.
Just searching for a reason besides psychopath.
I feel like we should just draw attention to our recent episode about Lizzie Borden, in which they claim that she couldn't have done the murders with an axe because only a man could like wield an axe, and it was considered like women killed with poison, because that was the more sophisticated way to do it. And how it's kind of fun to talk about Marianne Cotton, who really embraced the poison, it appears.
Yeah, it's a cleaner way to kill, I guess.
Yeah, it covers your tracks. It's kind of like smart. She's being smart.
Should we put up the power of arsenic? I mean, that seemed to be what Deborah was getting at with her quote. It was like, it's such a great way to kill people.
And the popularity and availability of what they called, it was literally called inheritance powder. So I think Aubrey's looking at me like, oh. Again, this is Deborah Blum. An analysis of 19th century crime statistics by the American forensic chemist Rudolf Witthaus of Columbia University found that arsenic alone accounted for about 40% of poison homicides in Europe from about 1835 and 1880. At the time, poison was astonishingly easy to acquire. It was used in tonics, cosmetics, to color everything from wallpaper to jewelry as the lethal agent in flypapers and rat poisons. In the 19th century, arsenic, specifically arsenic trioxide, also called white arsenic, was used so often that its nickname was the inheritance powder. That began to change in the mid-19th century after chemists, notably a determined British scientist named James Marsh, learned to detect it in a corpse. Cotton was hanged, in fact, in part due to the forensic evidence of the Marsh test. So there was like a, I guess, an arsenic like glory period where
they had it in like cosmetics, you said. Did you read that? Or I read that somewhere. I mean, this is kind of going back to what we just talked about in our previous episode, too. It's like crazy, like the radium from the Radium Girls, like crazy right. that we just put these poisons in cosmetics as like a health thing.
And what?
Mm-hmm. And again, it makes you wonder what they have in this stuff today.
Sure. You know?
Right. What are we consuming now that's slowly killing us?
It's microplastics. That's what it is.
It's not going to be in the food. It's going to be in the...
It's in clothes and all that stuff, disposable goods. And it's like getting in the ocean. It's a bit more insidious. And like, you know, the EPA or whoever is in charge of keeping an eye on that is just sort of like shrugging it off because it's just such a massive industry. But I digress.
It's intense here in California because I think there's a different California law where they're required to disclose like certain materials or chemicals or products that were used. So I feel like you see it all the time. You get like a new pillow from the store and it's like, you might die from this.
Yeah. But it's $59.99 and it's cheaper than the other ones you can buy.
You'll die slower than arsenic. As long as we're dying a little bit slower.
Yeah, you still got a good 20 years. Don't worry about it.
Oh, gosh.
Did we put up divorce laws divorce laws? Because I think that this had something to do with the fact that she kept killing her husbands.
You think she wanted out, or do you think that was just to get some cash?
Yeah. Well, women get out of a marriage then, right?
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, I think there's got to be something to that, right?
Put it up on the board, if nothing else. If you know, Mary Cotton wasn't, you know, I mean, if it was divorce she was after, you know, why would she keep getting married? But
right, I guess that's true.
I don't know if
Mary Cotton was in the workhouse, like you had to be married as a woman then. If the only way you could, you know, have a home,
yeah. But let's talk about the rise of life insurance industry. Mm. This is according to Dark Angel. In the middle third of the century, the temptation to poison underwent a growth spurt stimulated by the rise of the insurance industry. The first life insurance company organized along modern lines was founded in London in 1762. By 1835, over 30 new ones had been launched. One had to destroy the insured life without being detected. And for that purpose, poison was ideal. Unlike the bullet to the head or knife to the gut, poison produced a death that could pass off as natural. Cotton was the undisputed champion of the game of murder for insurance money. In every case, death was diagnosed as some form of gastric complaint, and in nearly every case, Cotton was the beneficiary of an insurance policy. One of the uninsured was the fiancé, but he paid off in his own way, having been charmed into writing a will that left her all of his possessions. Mm. There was also a fourth husband, but he escaped the other's fate when Cotton left him after he declined to be insured. Oh, so I guess that was another point of contention why he left.
Anybody, anytime your spouse is like, God, we got to get around to getting you some... some really good, life insurance.
Have you thought about bumping up your life insurance? I feel like.
Why is Clayton laughing? Because I feel like
I've been like having Mike that conversation with Mike recently.
Oh, I've yelled at him a lot. Careful, Mike.
We have four dogs, okay?
Well, yes.
Who's going to care for the dogs?
Who's going to care for the dogs?
It's really important, and especially, Aubrey, people with kids. I mean, you have to have all your ducks in a row when it comes to, like, life insurance and stuff like that. You just have to. It's like anytime you – but you know, you just got to watch your spouse, like, when they're talking about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. What's their attitude like? Are they
what's
really –
what's their body language? What's their body
is there a sense of urgency? Like, how soon do you need to get it?
Yeah, exactly. If they keep putting it off, that's probably a good sign.
Yeah.
But also a bad sign because you won't have it if something happens.
Right. I also think that, you know, I sometimes think about it in terms of market volatility, right? My brother Steve used to be working bond trading or something, and he would always talk about the best time for him was when the market was really volatile so he could take advantage of it because he knew. So I feel like, go with me here for a second. Mm-hmm. Arsenic was really potent, but also really hard to detect at this point. And I feel like she had a sort of awareness of that. So she was aware that there was this window of opportunity where people weren't catching on to these arsenic killings. And perhaps they would one day, and they eventually did. But I don't know if there's something to that or how we would categorize that.
She was a gambler.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, and things like infant mortality and child mortality rates were much higher than now. So, you know, died all the time. You know, it was normal. I don't think people looked into it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I think let's put up natural causes just in case. Right. And we'll
wait.
And this kind of
natural causes is to blame for Marianne Cotton.
No. Well, for the deaths.
The children were natural causes. Some
Some of them were.
If you have 13 kids, then some of them are going to die.
Mm-hmm. At that time, the odds are yes.
Yeah. So this is Martin Connolly. Says, in my researching Marianne Cotton, I have moved from thinking of her as the mass murderer of local legend to a very misunderstood character who may not be guilty of as many deaths as have been alleged. If any, no one actually testified seeing Marianne administer any arsenic to any person. Medical witnesses contradicted each other in the matter of arsenic at the doctor's surgery where a mistake could have been made. The times she lived in were times when death from illness was extremely common. I would argue she did not murder the Mowbrays, with the exception of Isabella, where there may be a reasonable doubt. With regards to her mother, this is too doubtful. It is very unlikely, but not impossible, that any of the Robinson children died at Mary's hands. It was hindsight that brought the accusations. With George Ward, we again see a man who had bad medical advice was very ill. His illness was the subject of great scrutiny by three doctors. There is also no substantial evidence that Marianne had any hand in the death of Margaret Cotton. We have to that was the wife of Mr. Cotton before she married him. And we have to resist looking at her death in the light of Marianne's trial and try to reason on available evidence. In relation to Fred Cotton, Marianne certainly did not have involvement in the deaths of his wife and daughters. So
I take that point. You know, you evidence, man.
Important.
Evidence is key.
Important if you're going to hang someone.
Sure. I suppose in the world in which you have enough children that die of natural causes that you become a bit callous to death and just begin to murder.
Right.
That, you know what?
Jaded. You're jaded.
Yeah, jaded to death.
Well, yeah. I mean, that. What's that word? Desensitized or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
We have to remember that. You're right, Aubrey. It's like those were the times. Death was upon...
Common, yeah.
Yeah, everyone.
So are those two separate, jaded and desensitized, or is that one thing?
No, I think one thing.
Yeah, one thing. It's
okay.
And, you know, there's also the chance that it could have just been accidental poisoning.
13 times. She's a really bad cook. She needs to move the arsenic away from the salt.
Well, but not kidding. Okay, so this is again Martin Connolly. This makes this point. With Frederick Sr. himself and the cotton boys who had died in West Auckland, we have difficult issues to face. No evidence regarding Frederick was found because the body was never recovered. There was no doubt arsenic was found in the bodies of the cotton boys and also that of Joseph Natras. The question to ask was, how did it get there? Marianne admitted that she may well have administered the arsenic, but insisted that it was not willful or intentional, and stated that she suspected that the arrowroot bought from Thomas Riley was contaminated. So she kind of like threw one back at Mr. Riley. Okay. Some practitioners did use arsenic as an ingredient. Her lawyer was at the trial, raised the issue of arsenic being around the house in Front Street because of the arsenic soap. There was the use of arsenic impregnant green wallpaper. So they, despite the issue of the green wallpaper already being a national scandal, it was even being raised in Parliament, it was dismissed at the trial. So apparently there was this popular green wallpaper that was being used that had arsenic in it. Mm. But people already knew about it at this time.
Hmm. But if she's not hiding getting the arsenic, and arsenic was sort of in everything then, and they had it in their systems, it doesn't necessarily follow that's how they died.
I feel like we're starting to get to like a place of debate.
Yes, let's do it. Anything else we want to throw up? Because if not...
Anything else? Who else do we think it could be to blame?
I think,
any of the children? Do you want to put any of the children up on the board?
I mean, the husbands have to be to blame a little bit. But if there were less of them, that would be a stronger case.
I know.
Okay, well, let's just... We'll refrain from putting the victims up on the board for this
one time.
Slightly, the patriarchy, because you listed single or unwed mothers as having to live in the workhouse.
Right.
So yes.
That was the only option.
Patriarchy?
Yeah. Okay, this feels like a really good list. Let's take a quick break and then start knocking things off the list.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, who is to blame for the deaths that surrounded Marianne Cotton? Is it Marianne Cotton? Getting Away With It Once. The Power and Availability of Arsenic. Difficult Divorce Laws. Rise of Life Insurance Industry. Natural Causes? Question mark. Dated and Desensitized to Death. Accidental Poisoning. Or the big P. You know it. You love it. The Patriarchy.
Good list. Really good list.
Solid. It's a shorter list than we usually have. So this should be easy, or should this be harder?
Well, we'll see.
We shall see.
I think off the bat, we can take difficult divorce laws off of the list, because I think it was more to do with insurance money. And right. And I also think that could fold into the patriarchy. So.
So we're removing difficult divorce laws and patriarchy.
No. Yeah.
I see. Folding it in.
Yeah.
I feel like accidental poisoning is just too silly.
No. I feel like natural causes is way more likely than accidental poisoning.
Yeah. Once maybe, not that many times.
Yeah. The oopsie daisy theory.
You kill one kid, you put the arsenic up in a fake.
Yeah. Oops.
Oops, shit. I should really
use that one again. I should throw this. I keep meaning to throw it out.
Keep this in the kitchen.
But
that's just brutal.
Natural causes. What are the odds that every child that she pretty much. I think there was one child she had that survived. The one who went away with the husband who left her. And I think that was the only.
Yes.
That was the only child. Yeah. George. All of them.
Lucky George.
Yeah. Right.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. That's rough.
Boy, it's interesting to think about the rise of the life insurance industry. If you think about she continually collected money, right, from these deaths.
No, not continually, just once. Here's the weird part. The money wasn't a lot.
Okay.
It was you're talking about £35, which I'm sure at the money was at the time was more than £35 now, but it still wasn't that much.
Well, right? I mean, you know, it could also speak to the conditions they were living in. If it depends on, you know, depends on how much money they have, I guess. But go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it didn't seem she was targeting particularly wealthy men, but maybe that was also the class thing.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. What do we think here? I think we can take out arsenic itself. It's more Marianne. It's more than the potency of arsenic.
I mean, the availability certainly makes it easier for anyone who wants to utilize it, but you can't really put the blame on the means itself.
Right. And I think Deborah, when she comes on the show, hopefully for the Aftermath episode, we'll maybe, you know, speak to that a little bit more. Yeah. But
so we got to figure out who we're going to send to jail here and who we're going to give the big slap to. We've got Marianne Cotton still up on the board, possibly an alarmist first, where the murderer is still up on the board. Getting Away With It Once, that idea.
Yeah.
I think we can take that off.
Well, just going to say, actually, you know how many, I mean, my expertise being that I watched all of the show Manhunter, but in that show, I'm sorry, Mindhunter.
Mindhunter, yeah.
Yes. Manhunter is a very cheeky, different show.
Yeah. That could be sexy, too.
Well, I've never seen, actually, my expertise is only in Manhunter, so I actually probably shouldn't.
Okay, so.
No, in Mindhunter, you know, there's or whatever, any kind of these psycho movies or serial killer movies, there's always that scene with the detective where he's looks at his co-detective and he's they're getting a taste for it. He's, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or
you know,
they're always really nervous when the one they get away with it a couple times and they're like, oh, he, you know, they like it.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I think there's something to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to say, I feel like kind of getting off on killing is more of a male thing though.
Mm. She maintained innocence too. I think it's important to remember that she never admitted to it up until her hanging, which, fun fact, I'll just add this, that it was a bungled execution by notoriously, I guess, like clumsy executioner. And what happened was he didn't position the trap door high enough. So when they hung her, it did not break her neck.
Oh,
and
God.
Apparently he had to push down on her shoulders and it took 3 minutes for her to strangle, basically. Oh,
goodness.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine someone just like pushing down on
you? Nope.
No,
as an executioner, where you're like, I'm gonna have to like help this along. It's so
God. Oh God. We've come across this recently, like bad executioners. We also came across this in Mary Queen of Scots.
Yeah.
It's like you have one job. Like get that one right.
Right.
Or just don't do it at all.
Quit. Move careers.
Yes. Yes.
So this job is not for you.
So okay, we gotta make a decision here. We've got Marianne Cotton. I think we can take away getting away with it once.
Okay.
The insurance industry, the rise of the life insurance industry.
Well, I think to your point that she wasn't making a lot of money or only collected insurance.
But
once.
I do feel like that was the main, her main draw.
Right.
Initially.
Wasn't she doing sort of okay in the marriage? Like, she wasn't destitute, you know? So did she need the money? If she'd sort of stayed in the marriage, she would have probably had more.
That's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to take that off. It just couldn't have been about... It was just like, if it was a business strategy, it was a really bad business strategy. Like, blame her for being a bad business person. But
this is all speculation, but this is something we did not put up on the board, but perhaps untreated like mental illness.
Sure, I was just gonna talk about that, because I feel like even with the insurance industry, it's like maybe it's not about the money, but more about like how she cheated the system, how she got away with getting money that she shouldn't have got, just like she killed these kids that she shouldn't have killed, which is a psychosis thing, right?
Oh, you can't, I mean, I don't know how. If she is guilty of these murders, how could she could be balanced in, you know, chemically in her head? So it's got to be something going on there.
So here's where I'm at. I think we do send Marianne Cotton to the alarmist jail, and I think we slap untreated mental illness, or do we do vice versa?
It's a tough call.
Well, actually, I mean, this is all speculation, right? So we can't prove that she had untreated mental illness.
Right.
So
but we can slap it.
But we can slap it, yeah.
I think in this case, it's got to be a factor. I mean, when you just look at the behavior and the history of the, you know, her history there, I don't know.
And I do think that patriarchy does play into it, but
I also
think that the killing of the children if you know what I mean, well, there's more there.
Well,
mental health at that time too. I mean, things like postpartum depression.
Yes.
She could have simply suffered from that, and no one
true.
I think that's true, and to me, the desensitization to death and the patriarchy could fold into this untreated mental health issues because I mean, they were contributing factors to you know, the gaslighting and all the.
Yeah,
and again, all of this, or all that
oppression.
We've learned, all that we've learned about how these different things affect people.
Well, I'm going to call it.
Okay.
Untreated mental illness. You're getting the big slap. Marianne Cotton, you're going to the alarmist jail. There you have it. Say we've never sent a murderer to the alarmist jail.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever?
We've sent very few.
We have.
But we have.
But when
recently
when it comes-
we did. Recently we did, because we had the discussion of, instead of going big, we wanted to get some more like specific individuals in the jail. Because we have a lot of concepts floating around in the alarmist jail.
Yes. Yeah. And they're harder to keep track of.
That's true. They can get out of their cages very easily.
They can
easily.
really easily get out of the... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We just don't have the funding for that kind of prison anymore. but Aubrey, I mean, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for the murders of Marianne Cotton.
Yeah, this was super, super fun.
And I just look forward to you just sinking your teeth into this.
This would be great.
Really,
for you.
Can't wait to watch role. It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll thank you in my Oscar speech.
There you go.
Yay. Okay, no backsies. You have to do it now.
And just a reminder to everybody out there, make sure you go through your condiment section and just make sure the arsenic is not near the salt.
Yes.
Great. PSA.
Keep that arsenic under the sink or in the bathroom or something.
Great. After the murders, Marianne Cotton was buried on the grounds of the prison where she died, next to two other people who had been hanged years prior. Her youngest child, Margaret Edith Quickmanning Cotton, whom she had given birth to while awaiting trial, was adopted after her death. In June of 1886, Marianne achieved a certain legendary status when her likeness was exhibited in Madame Tussaud's Chamber of Horrors. Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at thealarmistthe on Twitter, at thealarmistpodcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Andes flight disaster that was portrayed in the movie Alive.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.